wonderful last great day. They fraught with a great deal of wonderful meaning for the world, for us as well. It's a great joy to be here in Tucson with you to see this last conclave. I bring you greetings from two festival sites to which I have already been. Johnson City, Tennessee. You haven't heard of Johnson City, but it's a very beautiful area up in the mountains of Appalachia, eastern part of the USA. And the majority of our churches in the eastern mountains are assembled there. Brethren in that area from Kentucky, Tennessee, and West Virginia, the western part of North and South Carolina. And they're a very wonderful group of people, very warm, and very loving, and very giving, and very serving. Myself, it was a kind of a trip back into nostalgia to attend the festival for a couple of days in Johnson City. I had the great blessing back in 1962, beginning to work in the mountains of Appalachia, and raised up the first church in that area in Lexington, Kentucky. One of my daughters, my eldest daughter, was born almost 17 years ago in Jessamine County, Kentucky, in a cabin back in a holler. You don't know what a holler is, I'm sure. But if you come from the mountains or you come from the south, you know what a holler is. And we had some very wonderful members in that little house back in the holler, back in the mountains. And we went back there for the birth of our first daughter. Beautiful place here in Tucson as well. And I rejoice to be with you on this very wonderful and exciting and meaning-filled last great day of this Feast of Tabernacles. Today, brethren, I've asked God to help me bring you a positive message of hope. Because, you know, there are so many wonderful, exciting, gripping things happening in the Church of God. Things that are full of hope. And these things are occurring, they're happening because the living Jesus Christ is hard at work. He's visibly giving us greater power over Satan, the devil, and his demons than ever before. God is giving us deeper understanding and greater insight into his way and his plan. Doing that primarily by magnifying the office of apostle and the office of his apostle. God is giving us greater love, and I have a certain amount to say about that. Greater love for one another and new, wonderful closeness. You could feel it in Johnson City. You could feel it in Vail. You can feel it here. And this new closeness is combined with an exciting new spiritual impact and a lot of new spiritual fruit. We just haven't had it quite the same way in a long, long time. So much has occurred in the Church of God in the last couple of years. And a lot of it has been traumatic. And I know there are still some hurts and some wounds that need to heal. Brethren, I can promise you they're going to heal. Because this is a time of healing. And this is a time of renewing. And things are healing. They certainly are. And at the same time, God has used and will use in a very powerful way some of the traumas we've undergone, beginning with the very serious illness, the heart attack of Mr. Armstrong, and then the very dramatic, miraculous healing which he underwent. And then there were other things that occurred, the sit-ins, the illegal attack on the Church of God by the state of California, Satan conspiring against us. God has used all of these things generate and to create a spirit of renewal and revival that is sweeping the Church of God. You can feel it and you can sense it. I hope you can, because if you can't, you're not very spiritually perceptive. It is sweeping the Church of God, and it is transforming the majority of our congregations, the majority of our members, and the majority of our ministers, and I include myself, and the majority of our deacons. These deacons have got to be transformed too. In this age and in this time of renewal, the majority of our deaconesses and the majority of our elders, nationwide it is happening, and it's going to happen, and is happening in effect worldwide. You know, there's a worldly church that talks about revival in our times. It's a buzzword they use. And when that kind of a church, usually the Baptists or the Church of Christ, some of these other organizations, when they have a visiting evangelist or a visiting preacher, And he may be a preacher in his home church, but when he hits your town, he suddenly becomes an evangelist. And he comes in, And they'll put up the sign in the front lawn of their church saying, "Revival in progress," or "Revival this week," and what do you know what I mean? You've seen the sign. Now, some of you may think that's what I mean when I talk about revival and renewal within the Church of God. But it most emphatically is not. We've experienced, brethren in Christ, something far greater and far more wonderful and far more transcendent and far more mind-boggling. Because when I look at it and I analyze it, sometimes, I sort of think, I didn't expect it. I hoped it would come. You know, maybe I was faithless in a way. I didn't somehow fully expect it. I wanted it to come, and it is, and it has. And, you know, it's far more dramatic than what the world has ever experienced, because the long-term results are going to still be felt in the kingdom of God. The long-term results of what we have undergone are going to still be felt in the white throne judgment and that period of time after the millennium is over. The ripple effect will still go on. And when I step back, as I do on occasion, and, you know, I look at the spectacular new spiritual fruit being born through this body worldwide, and you analyze a little bit what we were a few years back with so much diluting and so much politicking and things of that type, and what we have become, you look at the before and you look at the after. You see what we have become with God's help and the indwelling of the Spirit of God and a new work of the Spirit of God and the direction of God's apostle as God magnifies his office. Then the conviction can only deepen within me. It causes me to say, brethren, here in Tucson, that the Church of God has experienced and has undergone revival in our times. And I'm sorry if some other organization may have used that term, but it certainly applies to us right now. If you want to be transformed in your life, I mean, this is the time to fulfill that need of renewal. Some of our OTCs, I discovered back in the Midwest that some of our brethren there use that abbreviated form. An OTC to them means an old tired Christian. We got old tired Christians here in Tucson. We got old tired Christians around the world. If some of our OTC members, old tired Christians, would like to be renewed. You don't have to be tired because you've been in the church 20 years or 15 or 10. Some of you have misunderstood the events of the past couple of years, and you haven't caught the vision. You haven't caught the vision, and you would like to be totally turned on now in retrospect. Maybe you sort of missed the boat for a while. You'd like to be turned on by all that is occurring and the growth and the renewal. I'm convinced there's still time, brethren, for you to be a part of that exciting, gripping, wonderful move of the Spirit of God in the Church of God in this age that has transformed us virtually on every level. And whether you want to talk about government, whether you want to talk in terms of doctrine, whether you want to talk in terms of our relationship together as brethren, we've been transformed. It's an ongoing process. And so much has changed in a positive, exciting, heartwarming, wonderful, thrilling way in 1979 and 1980. Any of you notice, as an example, that the Church of God is fast becoming a family again? You know, the kind of family we were in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and into the 60s, and we sort of were a little bit into the 70s, a family which is bonded together in a tightly knit covenant relationship, because if you're my brother, there's a covenant between you and me. There's a covenant between me and God, but if you're my brother, there's a covenant between you and I. There should be. And that relationship is becoming more obvious again. And there's more serving and more loving and more giving and more reaching out and little acts of kindness than there has been in a long, long time. But for several years, sadly, it has to be admitted that just was not the case. Because we've begun to move away from God, we've begun to move away from the work of God, we've begun to move away from God's apostle, we've begun to move away from the Spirit of God, and there was monumental, ghastly, awful, ugly indifference in a lot of our lives, yours and mine. Let's put ourselves in the same boat. Too much indifference to some of the precious, vital things of God, and one thing that began to deteriorate was our relationship together as members. A lot of congregations fellowship began to go downhill very rapidly in the 70s, and you know that, brethren. A lot of you, a lot of our members worldwide, began to view fellowship as, you know, sort of 5 minutes when church was over, you shake a couple of hands, give it 5 minutes, run out the door. And that isn't fellowship. The Bible says we come to services to hear preaching and to be taught and to fellowship and to be bonded together with the people of God. And in 5 minutes, you cannot create that kind of a bond. But a lot of us began to do that. 5 minutes and out the door, back home, back to dinner, back to lunch. And there were walls going up in the Church of God worldwide. And our congregations began to have way too many cliques. And you know, the in-groups. You know what I mean? Are you in the in-group in your congregation a couple of years back, or are you in the out-group, you know, that they sort of feel, oh boy, I'm not really with it here because I'm not a part of the special group. And walls went up, and brethren began to say to some of those who were still trying to reach out, hey, you know, I got my group of cronies, and we don't want you in our group. You stay out. And some people did stay out. Some people were badly hurt. I remember, so clearly, coming into Pasadena, I was going to say headquarters, but it's not headquarters now. It's, you know, where the college is and a lot of offices. Our headquarters is here in Tucson. But it was headquarters then, sort of, 1976. I came in while I was still working in the churches in Eastern Canada. And I came in on a visit, and I remember being bewildered and sort of confused by a feeling of coldness, anonymity that seemed to be there and be pervasive in the hall in Pasadena during the services. And I don't want to hurt anybody from Pasadena because I view myself now as a Southern California member, but it was the case and this is how I felt. And I'd come in for a couple of days and I was excited by the prospect of being in church in Pasadena and seeing old friends. And when you're way off in Timbuktu, in Eastern Canada, it's sort of Timbuktu in a sense. You know, it's a long way away. It's off the beaten track. And it was exciting because I was going to see some old friends, I hope, and renew acquaintances and receive some warmth. And maybe have somebody shake my hand, maybe even have somebody, you know, give me a little peck on the cheek. And so I arrived with high expectations. This was 1976. And I remember that day sitting in services being sort of nettled by the fact that so many brethren didn't even bring Bibles to services. And we all brought Bibles in the old days. A lot of wives there sort of looking on their husband's Bible, and they didn't even have their own. I was sort of bothered by that, because in the old days, we all had Bibles. And wives didn't sort of hang on to their hubbies, you know, King James Version. They had theirs too. But there were a lot of people sitting there with no Bibles, and I was bothered by that. And I began to realize something was happening that was not good. And when services were over and I was looking forward to the fellowship, something rather disquieting occurred. Instead of getting up after the closing hymn and the prayer and, you know, beginning to mix and talk and reach out and smile and laugh and show warmth and fellowship. The book of Acts talks about fellowship. The vast majority of the brethren in the hall, there must have been 1,200 people there, simply filed quickly into the aisles. The aisles were packed with people and walked out of the hall saying Mary a word, with their eyes affixed on some invisible point a couple of inches above the exit door. And within 5 to 10 minutes, the hall was virtually vacant. And I felt bad. People say, well, it's a big group. You can't have warmth in a big group. But I remember the old days when it was a big group and there was warmth and love and very few people walked out of the hall in 5 minutes. Everyone stood up and said hi to the person next to them, began to fellowship. It was a kind of a shattering experience. Anyway, I sort of sat there. I watched everybody file out. I finally spotted a couple of hardy souls who were still there, and a few ministers whom I knew. Sadly, they're gone from the Church of God now. I think it's significant that they are. Sad but significant. I rushed over, and because I knew them, they were familiar faces. And I genuinely, naively stuck out my right paw, my hand, because I wanted to shake somebody's hand, and I assumed there'd be, you know, some reciprocating. And one of them looked at me rather warily. He did sort of shake my hand in a rather cold fish way. He looked at me with a tinge of impatience, and he said, what are you doing here? Don't you have anything, don't you have any work to do back in Canada? I was sort of unnerved. When I get unnerved, you know, I don't know what to say. I sort of stood there with a dumb look in my face and said, well, I'm here to go to church. And I felt that I'd been sort of scorned. The conversation lasted about 30 seconds. I knew I was being tolerated. So I sort of slunk off and went back to the motel and spent that Saturday evening in a motel all by myself, being very sorry for myself, have to admit it. Felt very sorry for myself. And I sort of sat there in the Holiday Inn in Pasadena, which is not a very exciting place, I can promise you, wondering what in the world had happened to the wonderful, giving, serving, loving, reaching out, fellowshipping, warm-hearted, generous people that I'd become a part of in 1957. Went back and sat in the motel and sort of watched some TV and thought about my first Easter Tabernacles in Big Sandy, Texas in 1957, 23 years ago. A powerful type of the kingdom of God, it really was. In 57, I was a scared, skinny teenage kid fresh out of the boondocks of Western Canada. And those are the boondocks, I can promise you. You didn't hear from the boondocks. You ain't seen nothing yet until you've been where I was born. And I arrived in Big Sandy, Texas in 1957 with 30 bucks in my pocket and the smallest pup tent ever seen in the USA, in which I decided to sleep for 8 days. And I was the kind of pup tent so small that, because I was a pretty big kid, 6 foot tall, if your head was inside the tent at night, your feet stuck out, and if you pulled your feet in, your head stuck out. Something always stuck out. And I guess it looked rather strange. At least it did attract the garter snakes. I had several snakes come in to keep me company. And, you know, Big Sandy, Texas is an interesting place. There are bugs and all kinds of things there. But I enjoyed it immensely, snakes or no snakes. And I want to tell you one thing. $30 I arrived with, I spent $10 of it on food, didn't spend anything else. Because all of those wonderful people at that feast site, brethren, all 1,200 of them, that was the entire worldwide conclave of the Worldwide Church of God, all 1,200 of them, seemed to launch a veritable campaign to fill the skinny, scrawny kid from Western Canada with a funny accent and with tons and tons of the best food I'd ever eaten in my entire life. I'd never eaten that kind of food before. I'd never had cornbread. There's no cornbread in Western Canada. But boy, that cornbread was good. You know, you put it in the milk. I didn't know what to do with it when people gave it to me. They said, you should dip it in the milk. So I dipped it in the milk. And I learned to eat all kinds of exotic things because all the brethren had seen. There were a few members there from Oregon and a few from Washington, a few from California, but everybody I bumped into came from Mississippi or Alabama or Texas or Oklahoma or Georgia or South Carolina. So they served me okra, and they all called it okri. And I never had that stuff before. It was slimy, but boy, it was good. That was the best slimy stuff I'd ever eaten in my life. And what else? I learned to eat grits. I never did get used to it. I never liked it that much. But I put up with the grits to get all the rest of the things they gave me. It was good stuff. And I was overwhelmed with the kindness and the love and the concern of all of those wonderful people who automatically, brethren, viewed me as family. And at that time, I needed that. I've been rejected by my physical family, and I needed a spiritual family, and I got one right quick. Never forget the people from Oklahoma who bought or brought, I don't know which one, about 50 chickens to the feast. And they roasted all of those 50 chickens on a dozen spits in the camping area. And then spontaneously, because the odor of all those chickens began to waft to the camping area, and everybody was sniffing and smelling the smell of 50 chickens roasting. That is good. That's a good smell. And when they roasted all the chickens, they didn't tell anybody what they were going to do when the chickens were all roasted, you see. Then they simply began to, you know, in this Oklahoma dialect, which I can't imitate, but they began to invite everybody at the top of their lungs, you know, y'all come. And they all came. And there must have been 400 people there eating those chickens. And it was good. And we were a family then, brethren. We had the love of God working within us. When I read in the book of John chapter 13, that by this sign shall all men know that you are my disciples because you love one another, in 1957, that rang a bell, it clicked, and I knew that I'd become a part of the people of God for so many reasons. But that was one of them. We were a family. We had the love of God. We had closeness. And I remember how it went on for years. I remember my first pastorate as a minister, my first full pastorate, in Indianapolis, Indiana, when I was all by myself, and that was my first job in that area alone. It was 1961. I remember how the brethren would stay after services in fellowship, not for 5 minutes. No, nobody left immediately. Nobody ran out the door when church was over. They wouldn't have thought of doing that. I would have been called Laodiceanism in those days, and in the good old days, you didn't want to be called a Laodicean, so you stayed to fellowship because you wanted to or because it was expected of you, and finally you did it because you wanted to, you see. And people would talk. I remember one day when they set the record in Indianapolis. I don't know if it's ever been beaten in any other area. Probably it has. But that was a record for fellowshipping, for keeping on, keeping on. And they kept on for hours. Church was at 1:30 and over at about 5. We preached a little longer in those days. And that evening, church was over at 4, at 4 rather. Not 5, 4. That evening at 9:15, I finally pushed the last hangers on out the door. There was a sort of a heavy elderly gentleman, wonderful man, is still alive, from Dayton, Ohio, and he and I sort of tussled in a friendly way at the door because he was going to be the last one out, you see. He wanted to set the record. And I think we pushed a little bit at the door, and I finally let him be the last one out, as I remember, and he was. That was about 9:20 that evening. Now, I know that was maybe overdoing it. But can you have too much of God's Spirit? Can you love too much? Can you fellowship too much? Can you really? Do you think you can? Now, most of our halls, we got to get out of the hall about an hour and a half after church because, I mean, they close it up and we can't afford to pay all that rent. But I think some of us who give the Church of God and the people of God 5 minutes ought to be ashamed of ourselves. You know, it was an unbelievable time. I call it the good old days. There are people who call it the bad old days, but I'm not one of those. I call it the good old days. We made our mistakes, and we had lessons to learn. Sure, I know that. But in a spiritual way, when it came to warmth and love and giving and serving and sacrificing, brethren, those were in every way the good old days, and I thank God that I was a part of it. But you know, things began to diminish in the 70s, and a lot of people who've gone from the Church of God now and allowed creeping liberalism to begin to invade the Church of God. And indifference on so many levels became prevalent. We became lax in so many areas. Sabbath observance, a few months before I took over a church that I'm now working in, an elder who's gone from the church now, who's left the church and become a dissident, gave a sermon in which he said, as an example of that era, that on the Sabbath he felt it was just fine to go down to Disneyland, you know, with the kids, and spend all day Sabbath at Disneyland, going on the rides, and walking around Disneyland, and enjoying Disneyland. And I remember hearing the tape and thinking, well, Mr. Armstrong always told us on the Sabbath, you look to God, you love God, you walk with God, you pray to God, you walk with God's people, you fellowship, you read the Word of God, you worship God. Maybe you do take the kids over to the local park for a half hour, an hour, and show them what a leaf looks like, and try to find a covey of quail, and talk about God's creation, sure, but Disneyland all day, and skip church, and sort of, you know, I began to realize something was wrong. Well, he's gone, as so many people are that were a part of that type of thing. Brethren began to lose commitment to the work of God. People stopped serving and sacrificing in so many ways. And sacrificing became imbalanced. You weren't supposed to sacrifice because that wasn't balanced. That was being self-righteous or something of the kind. And we began to see that on the campus of the college during that era, you wouldn't get a lot of highs and hellos and warm smiles. You know, you might get a few. You might even get a few people who turned their head away in the middle of the 70s and wouldn't even look at you when you walked by them. But back in the 50s, everybody said hi. In fact, a lot of people said howdy, and hi with a southern accent. Those are my early memories of Ambassador College. Everybody, all these people saying howdy with a Texan accent, or hi with a Mississippi accent. And then there were these rare people who would say just plain old hi, sort of clip, you know, they came from Washington or maybe from Oregon. But there weren't too many of those people. There were some. There were some, and it was wonderful. Then we lost a lot of that. But suddenly, about 2 years back, brethren, God began to do a work, and I want to talk about that work this morning. God began to do a new work, a wonderful work. He began to revive us and renew us and bring us back from a point of virtual spiritual death. And there's been some spectacular results. I think it's significant, and I do want to emphasize this. It all began to happen after Mr. Armstrong's almost fatal heart attack. and of God in great power, which is so very dramatically significant. God in great power raised up his apostle and revived him and gave him new life and new vigor and new energy and new vision and new power, brethren. He gave him new power. And as the energy grew in his mind and his body, Strong began to call us as the Church of God to renewed commitment, to the Church of God. And over again for the last couple of years, he has told us that the time has come, that the Church of God must be made pure, that the people of God must learn to walk with the Father again in a very special way. The time has come to draw close to God, he tells us. The time has come for the Bride of Christ to be cleansed and purified, and for our conversion to begin to deepen again. The time to cast off a lot of liberalism and a lot of indifference. And slowly, just as God had healed Mr. Armstrong physically at the point of death, he began to heal the Church of God spiritually when it seemed that we were dying, and when to some of us, for a while, we began to wonder if we would ever recover. And some incredible things have begun to happen. I had the great blessing of being transferred into Pasadena in the month of May of 1978. And it was a blessing. Just a few months after Mr. Armstrong had been healed and had begun to re-involve himself in the work of God again, in all the facets of it, he'd always been involved, but now he was re-involving himself in everything, the college, the work, the church, the ministry. And I was blessed to see, and I mean this in the right way, I was blessed to see all the transition there, the tag end of the liberal era, what we had become, and then the transition as Mr. Armstrong began to call us to new commitment and to a time of renewal, and then what we have become as the Church of God has responded to that call. And brethren, have you seen what we've become? Is it happening to you? I recall when people first began to smile again on the campus. That was in the summer of 78. And the secretaries would come to work in the administration building, and you know, I remember one of them saying, you know, it's wonderful. She said, I've worked here for 5 years and come to work virtually every morning, and half the people I'd see would just sort of turn their head, wouldn't even say hello. And she said, I had this guy this morning who hasn't talked to me in 3 years. She said, I don't know why he's been mad at me. But she said, this morning for the first time, he looked at me, had a big smile on his face, and said, hi. You know, she was thrilled. She was on a high all day long because somebody had said hi, who was a brother who hadn't said hi for 3 years, and she was excited, and then more and more people began to do it, and you could sense that something was afoot. We didn't fully know what was happening. We should have, if we'd been spiritually perceptive, if we'd been listening to Mr. Armstrong clearly, but we weren't yet. We'd begun to listen. I remember the attendance is beginning to rise slowly, 78, Bible study in church, but there were still some blocks. There were still hindrances, and the Spirit of God could not yet do the full work that is now beginning to do in a very spectacular way. So God had to help us along. Then, in January of 79, the state illegally invaded our campus. They tried to bully the servants of God, and they tried to control us, brethren. This was their main goal, to control us by removing God's apostle from his position of leadership. And Satan inspired that invasion. And in my mind, the major reason for that invasion of our campus was to remove God's apostle from that job. Because you see, he is a key factor and instrumental in that revival. He must be there. He has called us to renewal for 2 years. He's called the bride to purify herself. And if Satan could somehow remove the catalyst and the servant of God who has given us that call, he knew that he could somehow bring that revival, that renewal, to a grinding halt. And he tried to do it, and he failed. And if he had done it, brethren, if we had a different leader, I'm convinced as I stand here that the Spirit of God would not be working with us as a body in the way it is now. We wouldn't have seen revival in our times. We would have seen decadence and ignominy, and the process would have continued. But God was with us. I remember I was...